Welcome to Crunching the Numbers, the First Serve's in-depth look at the art and science of playing the game.
Well, welcome to another episode of Crunching the Numbers. I'm your host, Mark Sepoulos from the Tennis Menu. And we also have Mr. Shane Leonage, the man who has transformed cricket in Australia. He's transformed tennis all over the world. He is the man with all the numbers. Thank you so much again, Shane, for joining us from Data Driven Sports Analytics.
I tell you what, these introductions become more fiction each week. Thanks, Mark, and welcome, everyone.
Oh, he's transforming the world, this man. And maybe he should run for president and take over Donald Trump. But he is the man with the numbers this week. Last week, we discussed the best forehands in the game, Shane, and we obviously had some great data around, you know, Federer, Nadal, Del Potro on the men's side. We talked about Serena Williams and Pliskova and Angelique Kerber dominating on the women's side. This week, we're going into the backhand side, and obviously, we talk about the sword and the shield in the men's game, with the sword being the forehand, the shield being the backhand. On the women's game, it's a little bit of an evenness or a reverse almost, to the point of where the backhand side is a bit more of a weapon. Today, we're going to take a little deep dive into the best backhands in the game. And obviously, you've done your research on the male and female side. And what'd you come up with this week?
Yeah, so this is a little bit of a continuation from what we were discussing last week, but looking at the backhand this time. And there's probably no surprises that certainly on the men's side, at the top of the heap is Novak Djokovic. Very, very high defensive and offensive scores on the backhand. I think that shot alone has certainly played a big role in a number of those Grand Slams he's accumulated. And certainly it's the shot that's really helped him defend against his two biggest rivals in Nadal and Federer. And you see that under pressure, it just doesn't break down. Next, we've got on the rating system, we've got Dominic Thiem. And I'd say Dominic Thiem's had high offensive scores on his backhand for some time. And particularly on the clay, his backhand has been such a great shot to get him to the last two Roland Garros finals, but also be a really consistent threat on the clay, beating some big players. In fact, he's got one of the best records against Nadal on clay of any player in Nadal's career. So certainly the backhand's a big part of that. But what I think he's done really well in the last 12 months is he's significantly improved it on quicker surfaces. So in particular, in defense on the faster courts, he's improved his backhand, and that's really helped him. And you've seen that in the hard court results and even in the year-end final on theoretically the fastest court on tour. He beat Djokovic and he beat Federer, and he made that fantastic run to the final, only narrowly losing to Tsitsipas. So certainly that backhand's been a key part of that. And then we've got someone who I think everyone probably acknowledges has had a fantastic backhand in Andy Murray. So I'd like to explain that, I suppose, the viewers to say that he still scores quite highly, and it's partially because a lot of the data that we've got from his last 30 matches are from 2016 and 2017, when he was really right up at the top of the game. But I'd still say his backhand is elite, and I think you'll see that once the tour resumes, Andy Murray's going to make a nice road back up to the top of the game. Now, on the women's side, we've got our recent Australian Open winner, Sophia Kennan and Serena Williams, and they actually score evenly on the overall ratings, although they both had slightly different offensive and defensive ratings on the shots. Serena, unsurprisingly, has a higher score on attack. I think a lot of that's driven by the fact that on the first shot on the return or the second shot on the return, she's lethal with that backhand. Her offensive scores are quite high, but Sophia's is also quite good. And at the Australian Open, her backhand was very hard to break down. And you saw that in the final against Muguruza. One that surprised me, and that was Bianca Andreescu. I never thought the backhand was a weakness for her, but I never thought of it as a strength. So I really dug a little bit deeper with this and found that the reason she scores quite highly is because she's very good on defense with the backhand, but she can turn defense into attack off that shot. So it scored highly for that. She's, like I said, I think she's a brick wall. She slides into shot from any part of the court. And while I think there are some sort of analysts in the game that may sort of have a knock on her backhand, not being sort of attacking enough, she's actually improved that significantly in the last 12 months, and her run at the US US Open really showcased that.
And so with the data, as we've discussed in the past, how are these numbers created in terms of, you know, ranking these players in the top echelon?
Yeah, it's a good question and worth doing a refresher for our listeners and those that may not have heard last week's episode, where we introduced a rating system that I developed at Data Driven Sports Analytics and one that we do use to benchmark players that we work with. And amongst other things, it rates the top 200 on their forehands and backhands, both from an attacking and defensive perspective. And to come up with these ratings, we actually capture data using our various sort of tracking systems and tools. And we collect data on a lot of things like winners, is the player forcing errors, where the ball's being hit from, where the ball goes, the changes in shot directions, proximity to the line. You know, we estimate the speed and spin on the shot as well. And perhaps one of the more important things is with all the data that we collect, we weight the performance or good performance under pressure. So if you're able to do good things under pressure, it scores higher. Once that happens, our rating system spits an offensive and a defensive score, and then the overall scores to an average of the two of that. So that's how it all comes together.
Yeah, and I guess that's a really important part, is the ability for the players to be able to play in all situations on the court. And that obviously, and we spoke last week about the ability of good players to have a real small difference between their best and worst tennis. It's no different when you're comparing a shot. You want to see a shot being able to be executed at its best and worst at a very similar rate. And there's no drop-off in terms of the quality of shot, no matter in what situation on the court. And obviously, those six players that you've just mentioned on the backhand side have got a great defense in their back end and then can be able to transition that to a great offensive game and step into the court and do a little bit more with the ball.
Yeah, definitely. And you can take this analysis a bit further. I'm keen because I love watching the single-handed backhands, the guys sort of on tour. But the Richard Gasquet, he scores very highly. You've got Dominic Thiem, as I mentioned, Stan Wawrinka, Roger Federer. These are the best single-handed backhands in the men's game. And keen to maybe get your thoughts on, I suppose, the differences, the pros and cons maybe to a single-hander, to a double-hander.
That's a really good question. I'm actually glad you asked it, because I think it's something that doesn't get touched on enough, is a single-handed backhand, because of the, obviously, not having an opposite hand involved in the shot, can actually rotate further around your back when you're actually in the backswing phase of your stroke. So as a player goes back in the backswing, you can actually rotate roughly between 10 to 15 degrees more with a single-handed backhand than you can with a double-hander. So with the double hand, you've got the opposite hand on, which reduces the ability for your upper body to rotate. So what you're then doing is, because you can rotate further with the single-handed backhand, you're actually gaining more momentum. So the more distance your racket can cover on the take back gives you more wind up, which is more momentum. And we call that elastic energy. That elastic energy is built up so much more on the single-hander, it can produce more force on the offense. And that's why you probably see, and it's probably interesting to see, but the double-handed players would have better defensive skills, but the single-handed players would have had more winners and more offensive side of the game because of the ability to pop the ball a little bit bigger due to momentum.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you look at speed and spin off the shot, the single-handers almost top the list. And then you look at the other end of the spectrum, the unforced errors, they're also leading the list there. So it's quite an interesting stat, but I'm glad that you sort of touched on the mechanics and the differences and the pros and cons there.
Yeah, and the other thing, I guess, with the double-handed backhand is the ability with two hands, you have more stability. So when someone hits the ball hard at your two-hander, it's not going to break down as much because you can counterpunch the ball. What does hurt a two-handed backhand is the inability sometimes to generate force. Because you've got the second hand on the racket, the lack of momentum and the lack of build-up of some elastic energy doesn't allow the player with the two-hander to generate as much force. So, you know, they won't be hitting as many winners with the two-hander, but they'll be forcing some errors. And also the ability to deflect the ball is a little bit easier as well with the two-hander. And they'll also probably have less return of serve errors than a single-handed backhand player, I would dare say. And that's something that you can maybe dig up in the next few weeks, Shane. But it's something I think return of serve, a double-handed backhand player definitely probably has less errors than the single-hander.
Thanks for giving me some homework. I'll add it to my list. I'm keen to sort of stick on that point, Lennon. This is a bit off the cuff, but someone like Novak Djokovic, who's had a tremendous amount of success, but if you step back and have a look, the players that have had the most success against him in the last couple of years are the ones that can hurt him with an attacking backhand, and a lot of them are single-handers. So you think of the names, you know, Thiem's had a good run against him, Wawrinka, Federer's got a couple of wins. He struggles against them more so than the two-handed backhands, and I don't know if it's I haven't got the data on this, and it's another thing that I might go and do some homework on. But yeah, an interesting observation, I guess.
Yeah, I think, look, I think the ability of those players that you mentioned with the single handers like Thiem, Federer, Stan Wawrinka have really good offensive skills and the ability to change direction of the backhand up the line. And that to me is a real critical component. You won't beat Djokovic in a cross-court backhand rally, but what you will beat him in is the ability to change direction to his forehand, where he's defensively not as competent on that side, even though he's absolutely brilliant. Don't take that away from him. I feel like the forehand side defensively is not as good as his backhand defensively. Hence the reason those players can change direction up the line, get him into a defensive situation on his forehand, and then he has to guess his direction of where he has to move after that. And I feel like once you've got a guy like Wawrinka who can pop a ball the way he does up that line, it's very hard to get into offense after he's done that. So, yeah. I think it's at the same time, it's coincidental. It is a single-hander backhand, but anyone that can pop a line against Novak Djokovic from their backhand has a much better chance because, you know, he does not miss on that backhand wing. And the other thing he does from the backhand side really well is he steps around the backhand to play an offensive forehand at times. And that can really hurt you. If he gets stuck in that backhand corner, look out. You've got to get him moving. You've got to get him to the forehand side and defending from the forehand corner more often than not.
Keen to touch on variety. So I know we talked a little bit about it in the past, particularly on the backhand. So is it easier for a single hander to slice or even come forward and volley? Is there anything that you see from a technical point of view that makes it easier being a single hander than a double hander to do those things?
Oh, the strength for sure. You know, the double hander backhand relies so heavily on the opposite arm and the non-dominant side that, you know, with a single hand backhand, obviously you're doing everything from that one side of the body, developing so much more strength, which gives you the ability to slice, drop shot, to be able to play different angles and be funky with that shot. I feel like the double handers, because they've developed for so long using the opposite hand, I feel like that is it's a real challenge for them to be able to develop enough strength to be able to have that variety. And the other thing is when you've got a double hander, you don't want to not use it because it's such a great defensive shot. So you can counter punch a ball, you can deflect it in any way that you want. You return really well with it. So there's pros and cons for both, but I feel like, you know, the single hander does have the ability. Ash Barty's one that can do it, obviously with a double hander backhand can slice amazingly well. But, obviously you look at guys like Federer who can change the game so well with the slice backhand. But, it is definitely something that I look at is when you're developing a single hander, you need to have the variety of coming into the net and volleying, slicing, you know, the heavy topspin lob off the one hand is another one that is done really well from a single hander. But the double handers obviously have other avenues that they're really good at. So it's hard to judge which is better. Everyone says to me, what would you prefer? I said, well, a double handed backhand for return and for counter punching, but then use a single hander for generating ball speed, slice and volleys. So that would be your ideal mix of a player. So halfway between Djokovic and probably Wawrinka / Federer, if we can have all three of those, I'm doing quite well.
That's the aim, to mold a player that can do everything. Maybe that's the dream player.
Get some data on that, Shano. I'd love to see which player can do that. What about the female side of the game? We've touched on the male side. What about the female side of the game?
Yeah, I'm probably interested to lead into this with an interesting stat. So the serve plus one, in the men's game, I think the winner ratio is at around 13-14% for a backhand. The women's game, it's closer to 40%. We've touched on this about, the women's game certainly using the backhand side more offensively than the men's game, but that's a key stat that highlights that to me.
My eyes have always told me that the ability for a female player to play really offensively off the backhand is always there, but now the numbers just show that 40% of a first ball or a plus one strike is unbelievable stat. You know, the ability of a female player, and a lot of them out there, can hit inside out backhand, cross backhand, down the line backhand. They have these amazing abilities to do so much from the backhand side. A lot of the time we talk about the female players a lot stronger through the hips, and there's no doubt that the backhand side enables them to be able to utilize the second hand and the hip drive to be able to generate more force. Yes. And they do it really well. And obviously that's that for me, 13% on the males compared to 40% on the females. That's an incredible difference of the ability to pop a backhand, forcing error or winner and getting control of the point.
And then on the three players that I mentioned, so Serena's probably no surprise. I feel like she's certainly with the power game, she almost revolutionized the game in the late 90s and early 2000s. And maybe that you know, the power of the backhand was something that sort of took players like a Martina Hingis, who were dominating at the time, really into submission, really, and Serena and Venus as well, just took control of the women's game for nearly a decade, and it's still quite a fair bit up the top there. And then, you know, recent times, you've got someone like Bianca Andreescu, and people have watched her move onto the backhand side, but she slides into a backhand better than anyone I've seen. Almost the female equivalent of Alex de Minaur sliding around the court. You kind of hear the tyres screeching every time she plays. But the backhand side is something that she used incredibly well. And that final against Serena at the US Open, you couldn't break it down at all. Sophia Kenin, this year at the Open, again, her backhand was so instrumental in that final, but all the way throughout the tournament.
Yeah, and that's the key, isn't it? The ability to be able to defend and attack with it. And the players that you've mentioned, Kenin, Williams, Andreescu, and we throw in Ash Barty because Ash Barty's got that slice backhand defensively that can really, and offensively, that can hurt you. You know, if you can defend an attack from one side of the body, it just makes such a big difference. And that's obviously where your stats come in. The ability to be able to play defense and offense from the same side is critical for those players being at the top of the game. And it's no surprise that the six or seven players that we've mentioned here, Djokovic, Thiem, Murray, Kenin, Williams, Andreescu, and Barty, are all in the top part of the game. And obviously Murray had a few injuries. But, you know, you look at those players, the reason they are so good is the difference between their good and their bad on that side of the body is very minimal. And that's the key to being a good player, is having a very small gap between your best and your worst on any shot, on any part of your game. And that, to me, is a real standout for those seven players.
Yeah, absolutely. And I might end on one question for you, Mark. Why haven't we seen as many single-handed female backhands?
Can you give me an easier question to finish off on? Seriously. Look, I think it's a strength thing. For me, the ball speed, the way that the game is played these days, it's very hard to defend with that single-hander. You know, from a young age, the easiest thing as a coach to do is to put two hands on, because it's so hard physically to be able for a young kid to play a one-handed backhand. So every coach these days puts the second hand on, bit of security, helps the young kid to get the ball over the net. And once you've done that, it's very hard to change. Once you get 10, 11, 12, there's no changing that stroke production. So look, I think it's the game itself, being the power game it is, and obviously from a young age, it's very hard strength-wise. So yeah, I would say that's probably the key to it. But you know, there's no doubt, there's nothing like watching an unbelievable one-handed backhand. And you hit the nail on the head before with Wawrinka and Dominic Thiem and Roger Federer. To watch those guys in action, to be able to pop the ball the way they do due to the extra rotation, is just an amazing, amazing thing to watch. And you know, you keep coming up with these stats, mate. The 13% male strike rate on the backhand side for forcing errors or hitting winners, compared to 40% to females. That, to me, is a standout stat for this week. Shane Leonhard, the man who has changed cricket. He's changing tennis. He's changing the world. Donald Trump, look out. Thank you so much from Data Driven Sports Analytics. Go check it out all over social media, because he has got the stats that you don't want to miss out on. And thanks so much for your research this week once again.
Thanks, Mark. And yeah, I might put a disclaimer after people listen to that. But thanks, everyone. And we'll see you next week.
Absolutely. That's been another episode of Crunching the Numbers. Don't forget, First Serve has so many podcasts at your fingertips. Aussies Only, In the Huddle, and the one and only Brett Phillips and Sam Groth every Monday night on free-to-air radio on SEN, as well as going back and listening to their podcasts. So many things that you can take out from all of those podcasts. But the tennis lovers that are all out there trying to get a taste of tennis, obviously, in these challenging times. But I've been Mark Sepulis from the Tennis Menu. Please look us up. We're all over social media, www.tennismenu.com. And obviously, Shane Leonhard from Data Driven Sports Analytics. Thank you so much once again for joining us. See you next week.